Welcome to Bed Crime Stories Podcast. I'm your host, T. Hi, guys. Hope you're having a wonderful day. If you're new here, a warm welcome. Thank you for checking out my channel. All I ask is that after listening to and or watching the video, if you find you enjoyed it or learned something, smash that like button and consider subscribing. Now, let's dig in. Hi, guys. Orenthal James Simpson, aka The Juice, or simply OJ, died on April 10th, 2024 in Las Vegas, Nevada of prostate cancer. Shockingly, many in the news media eulogized him first and foremost as an American football legend, an actor, a sportscaster, and a very memorable Hertz spokesman. And that may be because back in 1995, when OJ was on trial for the gruesome murders of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and a young man named Ron Goldman, he managed to dodge a guilty verdict thanks to what's been called a dream defense team that was made up of pricey Hollywood lawyers who well understood the theatrical nature of a criminal trial, especially when it was for somebody very famous. It was also thanks to a jury who believed more in a police cover-up than in the powerful evidence that was presented. Can you tell how I feel about OJ's guilt and responsibility? I'm convinced he's guilty because he had a track record of DV against his wife, Nicole, and he was known for pretty much following her everywhere she went, especially post their divorce. And especially when it came to dating men. And OJ was a fairly large man. He was 6'1" tall and about 212 pounds. So not exactly Charles Barkley, but still a very large, intimidating presence. OJ was known to make scenes, throw tizzies in bars and restaurants where Nicole was with her dates. And the police in Brentwood, California pretty much knew his number by heart because Nicole dialed 911 on several occasions when she was fearful of OJ and was afraid he was going to commit DV against her.
911 emergency.
Can you get someone over here now to 325 Gretna Green? He's back. Please.
Okay, what does he look like?
He's OJ Simpson. I think you know his record. Could you just send somebody over here?
Okay, what is he doing there?
He just drove up again.
He just drove
somebody over?
Okay, wait a minute. What kind of car is he in?
He's in a white Bronco. But first of all, he broke the back door down to get in.
Okay, wait a minute. What's your name?
Nicole Simpson.
Okay, is he the sportscaster or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait a minute. We're sending the police. What is he doing? Is he threatening you?
Going nuts.
Okay, has he threatened you in any way, or is he just harassing you?
You're going to hear him in a minute. He's about to come in again.
Okay, just stay on the line.
I don't want to stay on the line.
Wait, just stay on the line so we can know what's going on until the police get there, okay? Okay, Nicole?
Uh-huh.
Just a moment. Does he have any weapons?
I don't know.
Okay.
He went home. Now he's back.
Okay.
I guess I'm still sleeping and I don't want anything to happen.
Okay. Has he hit you today or no?
No.
Okay. You don't need any paramedics or anything?
Uh-uh.
Okay. You just want him to leave?
My door. He broke the whole back door in.
And then he left and he came back?
And he came and he knocked my upstairs door down, but he pounded it and then he screamed and hollered and I tried to get him out of the bedroom because the kids were sleeping in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then he wanted somebody's phone number, and I gave him my phone book and was going to, or I gave, put my phone book down to write, write down the phone number that he wanted, and then he took my phone book with all my stuff in it.
That's just one of the 911 calls to give you an idea of what she was dealing with. For today's video, I thought it might be interesting to share how OJ described the crime against Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman in his book, If I Did It. This book makes for quite a chilling read. Basically, OJ is saying that what he's writing is hypothetical. So if he were going to do in Nicole and Ron Goldman, this is how it would have gone down, according to OJ. Personally, as I read it, I felt that he was describing the actual crime. However, he was adding some embellishments to make himself look less guilty. Throughout practically the entire book, O.J. paints Nicole as the unhinged partner in their marriage. He accuses her of using illicit substances, of hanging out with a rough crowd in Los Angeles, and of basically being an unfit mother who, once they were divorced, was constantly trying to win him back. Talk about a gargantuan ego. In OJ's eyes, he was the good guy in the marriage, and Nicole was the troublemaker. This is a very audacious and delusional thing to say, because many of us have seen the photos of a bruised, swollen-faced Nicole and heard those 911 calls where she begged the police to come and rescue her. This was also victim shaming at its most egregious. I think OJ wanted to brag about his actual crime, and the only way to accomplish it was to write this hypothetical book about how he would have done it if he'd done it. I think that this speaks to him being quite the narcissist. He had been found not guilty, so he could risk this in the book. So here's what I'll say about this. You can decide which parts are true and which parts you feel he might have embellished or lied about. I see this book pretty much as OJ taking advantage of the fact that he forever silenced Nicole. The book allowed him to tell a one-sided story in which he was 100% the hero and Nicole was the villain. To me, perhaps the only chapter in this ridiculous tome that might include kernels of truth is the one in which he gives a blow-by-blow account of the crime. OJ refers to the evening of the crime as, quote, the night in question. Now, earlier that day, which was Sunday, June 12th of 1994, OJ attended his 8-year-old daughter Sydney's dance recital. Sydney was OJ and Nicole's firstborn. They also had a son named Justin. Sydney and Justin were just the most adorable looking children. They shared the best features of their mother and father physically. In the book, OJ admits to being in a lousy mood after the recital. He blames this on being exhausted and not looking forward to traveling by plane to Chicago later that night. OJ mentions a friend coming up to him and telling him Nicole and her friends were partying a lot and using those illicit drugs. The story the prosecution told during the trial was that OJ was miffed because he hadn't been invited to the after-recital dinner at Mezzaluna Restaurant with Nicole, her parents, the children, and other family members. Mezzaluna was a famous Italian restaurant in LA, and Nicole was dating the owner of the restaurant, which no doubt enraged Simpson. Also, Ron Goldman was a waiter at Mezzaluna. Here's where I think, if only he worked at some other restaurant, he might still be alive. So OJ says in his book that he went home after the recital. At some point, he got hungry, and he decided to hop into his Bentley and drive over to McDonald's for a dinner of champions. Now, his freeloading house guest, the infamous Cato Kaelin, he of the shaggy beach bum hairdo, rocking a California vibe, asked OJ if he could ride along. And OJ said yes. So they go to the Mickey D's, they get their burgers, and OJ eats his in the Bentley as he drives home to his mansion in Brentwood, a very upscale neighborhood. Back at the mansion, OJ goes inside and begins packing. It's around 9:30 p.m. at this point. Again, this is what OJ claims would have happened if he'd been the perpetrator. OJ writes that at 10:03 p.m. he finished packing and needed a shower. At some point, he glances out the window and he sees a car slow down at his gate. It's a guy named Charlie that OJ'd met months earlier at a dinner with mutual friends. Charlie comes up to the gate and OJ lets him in. Charlie tells OJ he's there because he wants to tell him something about Nicole, and it turns out to be something bad. Quelle surprise! What a surprise! Charlie tells an already riled up OJ that supposedly some guys he had dinner with that night told him about a trip they took to Cabo a few months back, and the guys partied with some girls. The girls were, supposedly, Nicole and her friend, Faye Resnick. Charlie mentions a lot of illicit substances, a lot of drinking, a lot of wild goings on, if you know what I mean, wink, wink. Well, all of this enraged OJ, like he was already simmering, and this took him to a mad boil. For a second, OJ gets mad at Charlie, and he says to him, "Why are you telling me this about the mother of my children?" Charlie replies, "Hey, I'm not the enemy here." OJ realizes in that moment, he says, again, hypothetical moment, that Nicole is the enemy. He glances at his watch. He has less than an hour before a limousine's going to show up to drive him to the airport. This means OJ has just enough time to drive down to Nicole's condo on Bundy in order to read her the riot act. OJ and Charlie then get into OJ's now infamous white Bronco, and they drive to Nicole's house. Charlie tries to talk OJ out of doing this, but OJ says, "F that, I'm tired of being the understanding ex-husband." Really? Nicole's a big girl. She's living on her own in her own condo. It's interesting that he thought he had a right to tell her what to do, who to see, etc. OJ then goes on a rant with Charlie as they're driving in the Bronco. He tells Charlie that after he and Nicole split up, she started telling him about the guys she was dating and asking him for advice. OJ glances over at Charlie and he looks upset. "Relax, man. I'm just going to talk to the girl. And it's gonna be quick. I'm leaving for Chicago on the red eye." When the two men arrive at Bundy, OJ says he parks in the alley behind Nicole's condo. He cuts the engine. It's eerily quiet that night, which spooks even OJ. OJ reaches into the back seat for his blue wool cap and some gloves. He says he keeps them there for nippy mornings on the golf course. Charlie tells OJ that he's gonna look like a burglar. OJ says good, and then he reaches under his seat for a sharp object, if you know what I mean. OJ shows Charlie the blade. Because Nicole's back gate is broken, OJ is able to quietly access the property. You know, after hearing that 911 call that Nicole made, I'm wondering if OJ is the person who broke the gate. In the book, OJ victim shames Nicole about this. He writes, "The buzzer didn't work properly and the gate opened if you gave it a little push. I must have told her a million times, please get the god... gate fixed, but the woman never listened." As OJ moves through the narrow courtyard toward the front door, he notices candles flickering in the windows and faint music playing in the background. He quietly walks past the front door to get a closer look inside. OJ wrote that it was obvious Nicole was expecting company, and he wondered who the F it was. As OJ is getting more and more steamed up, he hears the back gate squeak open. He watches as a young, good-looking guy with a thick head of black hair comes strolling through. It's Ron Goldman. OJ says, "Who the F are you?" He describes Ron Goldman replying something like, I just came by to return a pair of glasses." OJ, "Really? A pair of glasses, huh?" Goldman, "Yes. And he was carrying an envelope." Goldman, "Judy left them at the restaurant. I'm a waiter at Mezzaluna." OJ says, "So it's Judy, is it? You're on a first name basis with Judy." Just so you know, guys, Judy was Nicole's mother, and tragically, she'd left her glasses at Mezzaluna that night. Just then, the back gate behind Ron Goldman squeaked again. OJ wrote, "Charlie walked into the narrow space, and he was carrying the sharp object that had been in OJ's car." Charlie asks OJ if everything's okay. OJ replies, "This MF-er wants me to believe he's here dropping off a pair of Judy's glasses," and he emphasized the name Judy. Ron Goldman pipes up, "I am." OJ describes Goldman as looking increasingly nervous. Goldman holds up the envelope and tells OJ to look for himself. But OJ's not buying this. He's convinced Ron is there to hang out with Nicole. Here's what I find very unbelievable about this. OJ is saying that he was wearing the blue cap and the gloves. So, of course, to Ron Goldman, I would think that would look a tad menacing. And Ron Goldman might have known from his boss at Mezzaluna that OJ Simpson had a temper and had a tendency to follow his ex-wife around and stir up trouble and get angry and shout. I also find it fascinating that OJ has this friend, Charlie, being the one bringing the sharp object into the courtyard, even though he's already saying that he put on a blue wool cap and gloves. Why put those on in the summer in California? Sounds to me like he was preparing to commit the crime. OJ then asks Ron Goldman, "And then what? You were going to go back to the restaurant?" Ron replies, "No, my shift's over. I'm just leaving these glasses and then going home." OJ, "You expect me to believe that?" Ron, "I don't expect anything. I'm telling you the truth." OJ, "You're a effing liar." Ron, "I'm not. I swear to God." If this is really what happened, this had to have been terrifying to Ron Goldman. Here's OJ with a sharp object, wearing a wool cap, wearing gloves. He may have heard rumors about what OJ allegedly did to Nicole. OJ replies, "She's got candles burning inside, effing music playing, probably a nice bottle of red wine breathing on the counter, waiting for you." "Not for me," says Ron. OJ, "F you, man. You think I'm effing stupid or something?" Suddenly, the front door opens. Nicole comes outside. Per OJ, she's wearing a slinky little cocktail dress, black, with not much underneath. Her mouth falls open in shock. She looks at OJ and Ron Goldman, and Charlie, just beyond Goldman. OJ writes, "Goldman was pretty well trapped. Charlie stood between him and the back gate." How convenient for OJ to blame Goldman being trapped on this Charlie person. Nicole shouts, "OJ, what the F is going on?" OJ replies, "That's what I want to know." Suddenly, Nicole's dog, Cato, comes out of the house. He's wagging his tail. OJ looks at Goldman and says, "I'm listening, MF-er." Nicole shouts, "OJ, leave him the F alone. What are you doing here anyway? I thought you were leaving for Chicago." OJ replies, "F you." Charlie tries to get OJ to leave, but OJ is still questioning Ron Goldman. OJ writes that Nicole came swinging at him and told him to get out of there. "This is my house and I can do what I want." OJ shouts back, "Not in front of my kids, you can't." Nicole replies, "F you." Simpson says, "No, F you, I gave you everything you could ask for and you effed it all up." OJ said Nicole then came at him like a banshee with her arms and legs flailing. He says he ducked and she lost her balance and fell against the stoop. She fell hard on her right side. OJ wrote, "I could hear the back of her head hitting the ground and she lay there for a moment, not moving." OJ looks at Ron Goldman. And Goldman, according to OJ, was in his, quote, little karate stance. OJ says, "What the F is that? You think you can take me with your karate?" He starts circling me, bobbing and weaving, and if I hadn't been so effing angry, I would have laughed in his face. Nicole moans, regaining consciousness. She stirs on the ground and opens her eyes and looks at me, but it didn't seem like anything was registering. Charlie walks over and plants himself in front of me, blocking my view. "We are effing done here, man. Let's go." I notice the sharp object in Charlie's hand, and in one deft move, I remove my right glove and snatch it up. "We're not going anywhere," I said, turning to face Goldman. Goldman is still circling me, bobbing and weaving, but I didn't feel like laughing anymore. "You think you're tough, mother effer?" Then something went horribly wrong, and I know what happened, but I can't tell you exactly how. I was still standing in Nicole's courtyard, of course, but for a few moments, I couldn't remember how I'd gotten there when I arrived or even why I was there. Then it came back to me very slowly, the recital, with little Sydney up on stage dancing her little heart out, me chipping balls into my neighbor's yard, Paula, his girlfriend, Paula Barbieri, angry, not answering her phone, Charlie stopping by the house to tell me some more ugly stuff about Nicole's behavior. Then what? The short, quick drive from Rockingham, the mansion to the Bundy condo. So basically at this point, Simpson does not go through what he did exactly with the sharp-edged object. He just says that he looked down at himself and his shirt was covered in the red stuff and that there was a lot of red stuff under Nicole. She wasn't moving. She was in the fetal position on the ground, and Ron Goldman was slumped against the gate, and he too was sitting in a pool of the red stuff. So I'm going to leave it at that. Now, recently, someone has come out to say that OJ was with some mafiosos at Nicole's condo that night, that he hired some mafia guys to do this hit. I'm not sure I believe that. The guy says he didn't tell the story until now because he was terrified, so he waited until OJ's death to tell the story. I need to see the evidence in order to believe that one. Until the next time on Bed Crime Stories.